Blog Talk Radio.
His name is Malik Zulu Shabazz. Malik Zulu Shabazz.
It is indeed my honor and great joy and privilege to be invited by Brother and Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz, who is one of the greatest student leaders of all time.
I'm talking about terrorism now. We want a war on terrorism. The war on terrorism should have started 400 years ago. Bring the flag, brother. Bring the flag.
Bring the flag.
The ring. Because I'm here to tell you that false patriotism will not get you out of this. Holding a bandana flag around your head will not get you out of this. Huh? Flag on your antenna in your car will not get you out of this. You might be saying, God bless America. But when did America ever bless God? You might be saying, God bless America. But God might be damning America at this very hour.
What's all this shit I see on here about harassment and all that bullshit, rap for power? You son of bitches, get out and get a goddamn job and make a constructive citizen out of yourself and stop all this bullshit. You wouldn't have to have no fucking rally for power. You got that message, motherfucker?
Black power, black power. Right now, we're waiting for our national spokesman to come in, and we're also waiting for one of our political prisoners that's behind enemy lines. But until then, you have to deal with me. But I would like to say, I just want to really talk about a few things before our comrade calls in. I really, really feel like some of us ought to be ashamed of ourselves. And I think because, you know, we only celebrate Black History Month during Black History. And if we're Black and African and we are Moor and we are all the Nubian and we are all these different cultures and we're Islamic and we're Muslim and we're saying that we're all these different things, that we only pick, you know, a one-month time span, and it's the shortest month of the year, not to mention that we celebrate and say, hey, I'm black and I'm proud. Why can't we celebrate Black History Month throughout the whole entire year? Why do we have to claim to be black, or we're not ashamed to be black during this time of the month? I mean, during this time of the year, and that's pathetic. That is actually pathetic. We ought to be ashamed of ourselves. We have our comrade. We have all these comrades that passed, that died for us to continue their flight. And today I've experienced, you know, some of the most frightened and scared Negroes that just do not want to, move. They are so threatened and so afraid of the white man, the enemy. Let's use the key words, the true force. They are so afraid that they are afraid to step out there and organize. And organize against this system. This system is not going to get any better. The system didn't get any better in the 30s. It didn't get any better in the 40s. It didn't get better in the 60s. And God damn it, it didn't get better in the 80s. It didn't get better in the 90s. In fact, it got worse. Every little bit that they tried to do that the Black Panther Party and the Black Liberation Army and all the rest of these comrades that died and gave their lives for us to even breathe this air, that it just doesn't make sense that we are dumbed down. We are putting and eating the wrong foods that's dumbing us down. We're drinking from the water wells that's killing us and giving us cancer. And we're not trying to fight. We should be fighting against all these things. And then we got propaganda. Then we have certain organizations or certain people, because there's always a small few of people that stand up that aren't afraid to get killed or died or murdered, assassinated, and all these different things. And you mean to tell me that the rest of y'all leading and rocking with it, y'all listening to Lil Wayne and he's dumbing you down even further and making you think that this system is okay just because we have a black man in the White House? You all are still, y'all had a nerve to celebrate on a constant, on a consistent basis, and we're not even trying to do anything for our people. We're not feeding them. We don't have any jobs. We don't have any health insurance. We don't have shit. And you mean to tell me that y'all are okay with this and y'all want to go and go around up on this month of 28 so-called days, and it's barely 28 days, and y'all want to celebrate and say, hey, I'm black and I'm proud. So it is all an illusion. It's all BS that it's the same business as usual. What happened to our people getting back out there and not just having that small few of people that we had? We had the feel, the love that we had in the 70s and the 60s. People knew who the enemy was. We were clear on that. Now, of course, we're not clear on that. We don't know who the enemy is. We don't know who the problem is. We think we each other are the problem. And the moment we start standing up, y'all come, the same old folks come to us and say, I don't want to hear that black stuff today. I mean, what kind of stuff is that black stuff? But you would rather hear the Democratic stuff. You would rather hear the Republican stuff. And it's the same, you know what I mean? It's the same animal, you know what I mean? It just has a different nose. But it's the same exact animal. It's the same atom. It's the same cell and the same decadent system that has been against us since for centuries. Before we even, most of us even got, all of us even got over here, was kidnapped and raped and brought over here and murdered to be over here. So you mean to tell me that y'all are okay with this system? Y'all okay with this identity crisis? This is an identity crisis. You know what I mean? We should be out there raising hell. And you mean to tell me you got other countries, you got little countries that don't even know anything about the internet. They don't know nothing about, you know, different things that we know about. We are more, so this is a so-called more advanced land. America's supposed to be more of an advanced land, but you got these third world countries raising hell in Egypt, not taking it, because they understand, they clearly understand that the system in place is wicked. It ain't just the person, the figurehead, just like the Queen Elizabeth is the figurehead of the country. But we all know who's pulling the strings. The same way that you got your boy, your president, y'all president, that's pulling the strings, that's still running, that's not running things, but the people, the ideals behind him are really running the things. So while we're sitting around, you know, drinking coffee in the little coffee shops and making waves and chatting and drinking our Fresco and all these different things, we're okay with that. I just don't understand. It's business as usual. So what are we going to do? What are we going to do? That's what I want to know. What are we going to do in here? What are we going to do to make some things happen? What are we going to do to build? Are we going to still wait around for them to kill us all, to assassinate us all? Because they're doing it through the water. They're doing it through the foods that we eat. They're doing it by the system, by the education that they feed us, that we send our children to. They're doing it by four little men making decisions in one little room. You know what I mean? A whole system of things, and we're still waiting around to die. So, I mean, I'm just not clear. Somebody please explain to me why we're not clear on what a political prisoner is, why some of us don't even know if this day and stage of the world is 2001, why some of us don't even understand or understand what a political prisoner is. Why we don't understand what, I don't know, what actually racism means. Why we don't understand what clap means. Why we don't understand what the pigs. When I say pigs, I said pigs to a youth, and he was like, what, bacon? You know what I mean? So, I mean, like the fuzz, you don't know what that is. Or we don't understand what abuse and slavery and all these different things and the same, and then doing, let me tell you something, then doing slavery, I mean, sorry, during this time of the month, they talk about the same people. Don't get me wrong. I'm not knocking Dr. King. You know what I mean? For those who are big fans and love him and that kind of thing. I'm not knocking him, but it's more than just Dr. King. You know what I mean? It's more than just Dr. King that, you know, we have to look up to, that we, you know, we should admire. It's so many different other ancestors that saw this vision of us becoming the great people that we know to be. So I don't understand why we're just still celebrating, I don't know, Dr. King. Why Dr. King is one of the only one of the only black activists who has a, you know, holiday or their day off, you know. And most of our people don't even know what it means to what Dr. King really meant or anything like that. They just know, hey, I'm just getting this day off, you know, in January. You know what I mean? And then they still doing things. You know, we should be doing events for our other comrades that have given their lives. And, you know, where's our Mansfield Huey P. Newton Day? We don't have a street named after Mansfield Huey P. Newton. We don't have a lot of our things that we really should have, you know, going on within our system and within our own state. And just nationwide that we should be doing on our own, you know what I mean? There's a lot of different things that we really, really, really should do. And it just makes sense for us to do these things. Let me see one second, everybody. Let me see if we have the Conrad on the line. I'm not sure if this is his number. If y'all could hold on one second. Hello.
Until the philosophy which owed one race superior and another inferior is finally and permanently discredited and abandoned, everywhere is war. It's a war that until there are no longer first class and second class citizens of any nation, until the color of a man's skin is of no more significance than the color of his eyes, it's a war that until the basic human rights or equally guaranteed to all without regard to race. It is a war that until that day, the dream of lasting peace, world citizenship, rule of international morality, will remain in but a fleeting illusion to be pursued, but never attained. Now everywhere is war, war. And until the ignoble and unhappy regime that hold our brothers in Angola,
can you come in and make our first one raise your hand?
South Africa, by human bondage, I've been toppled.
Okay, well, we're going to be patient. We'll let them call in. So, anyway, sorry for that break, but it had to be done. I promised everybody we had his comrade, his brother on here, and we really, you know, I can't delay it. So we're going to wait for him to come on. So, at any rate, we just need to really get it together. It's certain things that we really could be making an effort to do. Upon, number one, being political education. We have to really start politically educating our people, not just on the terms of what we call the Democratic and Republican system. Yes, our people do need to know how it is. Yes, our people do need to expose the political propaganda. We have to expose the corruption in it so we can start our own government. So we have to run our own government. That's one of the points of our program when we discuss running our own programs and how we should have our own nation. And those things are not are tangible that we can be reached out to. We just have to really start building it. We already have our own nation of people. We just have to come together and make one. Because this community over here, the Nation of Islam is over here, then you got the Hebrew Israelites over there, then you got the African Hebrew Israelites, then you got more science, temple, science, and then you got all these different groups of beautiful and beauty, but we somehow won't come together. And we have to knock down all those doors and forget about religious ideologies in the format. It's good to have, don't get it wrong, don't get me wrong, I think it's great for everybody to have their own individual way or ideology of environment or the way that you are, you know, in a religious, spiritual sense. That's great. But what I'm saying, if it stops you from uniting with your people, then you need to look again at your religion. But Black Power, let me go ahead and bring this brother on. I think he's ready right now. Greetings, brother. Assalamu alaikum. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir. You on the radio?
Okay, this is Fake Cucumber Boy.
Yes, sir. Well, for those that do not know you, brother, could you give a background or backdrop of who you are?
Well, my name is Sekou Kamboy. I'm a member, previous member of the Quote Week Tendon, identified as the old Black Panther Party. I'm also a member of the Black Liberation Army, a conscious citizen of the Republic of New Africa, and a member of other, you know, clandestine organizations affiliated with the Black Liberation Army, in which we were clandestine involved in defending the rights of our people to live free and independent as a nation.
Okay, I guess we get right into it. On the terms of, like, what are some of the things, we have a question in the chat room, because you know they have, we have a chat room. What are some of the things that dealt with during your time on the streets or activism or revolutionary times?
Well, so, you know, I dealt with most of everything that the Black Panther Party were doing during those years. But on the other hand, I also worked with other organizations traveling around the country to help organizing the community. And sometimes the organizing was not always organizing another Black Panther Party, organizing members for or seeking soliciting membership in the Black Liberation Army. But we worked with Congress of Racial Equality, the Southern Christian Leadership Function, and various other sundry so-called civil rights groups when those eras, in which we provided security. Sometimes we helped mobilize in the community and participated in demonstrations and marches, whatever we were needed at during those years. Our main function was to make sure that the leaders of these different organizations were provided with some sense of security from enemy forces surrounding them.
Okay. Could you tell the listeners where you residing right now? Because I don't think a lot of people know about your story for those that have been in the cage.
Well, I'm in an Alabama concentration camp. We probably would have to go to another forum for more clear information on that, since we don't always know who's listening.
That's true. That is true. But yeah, we'll discuss that, but just the basic information. That's what I need, the basic information. You ain't got to go all into detail, but the basic information. So on those terms, like, what are some of the conditions that you have had to deal with? And before you tell that, why did you exactly get captured?
Well, originally I was charged with a series of murders of various European individuals. I was accused of murdering a Ku Klux Klan figure, as well as a millionaire higher oil executive, whose background, of course, I don't have any familiarity with to divulge at this time. But during the course of those cases and the investigations involved, the police forces, the federal FBI, and those people who were involved in trying to make sure that they could manufacture the right conditions to convict me, shared information with family members and friends when they were investigating them that they already knew that it wasn't me, that they committed certain crimes that they were charging me with. But the idea was that they couldn't get me to cooperate on some things that provide them some information and background on some things that they associated me with. And so for that reason, they said that they were going to charge me with them, and so I might as well have did them. So the end result was my conviction and incarceration from 1975 to this time.
So didn't you have, like, a trial recently? I mean, certain things that you can – I want to talk about what you can talk about, so just, you know, just let me know, hey, I can't get into that. You know, but didn't you just recently have a trial, and what were you actually convicted of once they, you know, got you? And when you given a trial and when you supposed to be released, could you share that with us, or bits and pieces of what you can share with us?
Well, I'm not clear on what you're asking me, but I'll say this: it was in 1975, and I was charged with two murder cases and convicted and sentenced to life in prison. Since that time, I went to court numerous of times, both in federal and state court, dealing with some aspect of my incarceration. Of course, the courts, both federal and state, has always denied any opening that I sought to pursue my release. And so the last thing that I had done was to develop the material for challenging the Alabama prison system and the Alabama paroling authorities and the governors of the state of Alabama for refusing to permit the parole authorities to release people with my background, myself, and, you know, hundreds of thousands of others who are similarly situated, who have been denied release to perpetuate genocide.
Okay. Could you go into, and so how did that work? How did that go about on the terms of, how did that fly over, so to speak?
Well, they're still sitting on it, you know, still playing with it and refusing to concede any right or wrongness on my behalf in regards to the litigation. So I've been pretty much writing letters around the country seeking to obtain some legal assistance who can work from the outside and help facilitate an agenda that would allow us to arrive at court to deal with the issues at hand pertaining to whether or not I should have been released over 20 years ago.
Exactly. And so I guess could you go into just things that you, since you've been in incarceration, since you've been behind enemy line, what are some of the, I guess, what are some of the things that you have gone, struggles, I should ask. What are some of the struggles you have gone through since you've been there that you don't mind sharing?
Well, you know, throughout the many years of my long-term incarceration, I've been involved with organizing the incarcerated people around the fact that they are human beings and that they are being deprived of their human rights and their dignity of being able to clearly be given the benefit of their constitutional rights and the laws of the state in an equal fashion. Of course, in this part of the country, you know, we're not considered to have equal rights because under the Constitution of Alabama, 1901, Equal Right Amendments was removed from it because the idea was that the black man should never be treated as if he was equal to any European. So certain aspects of the Constitution of Alabama that provided the equality of rights for both black and white was removed. And since that time, any one of us who came up under the attack of the state and its laws were deprived of our constitutional rights because they felt that under their laws they had a legal right to deprive of those rights. So therefore, we've never been given equality under the law in this part of the country, especially in Alabama. But over time, I've worked with other incarcerated people to help organize their families and, you know, produce demonstrations and marches around the country, including a march on Washington not long ago, where they were able to step to the forefront and advocate the fact that they were against the treatment that their black family members and friends were being subjected to in the state of Alabama. Of course, some of the leaders involved in those outside organization organizing, the extension of which began from inside of here, were attacked and later, victimized by a conspiracy to assault their character in such a way that they were now no longer able to function in a leadership role that allowed them to propagate the truth about the conditions and the abuses and the denial of human rights within the Alabama prison system.
That's something else. Well, what do you think, what are some things that the people can do out here to help you, to assist you and aid you in your case, number one, and just general, just general organizing on the political prisoners as well, but on just your general organizing for our people?
Well, in general, you know, it goes without saying that there must be a vehicle for propaganda and propagating the true issues around our political prisoners throughout the country, truth about their conditions, the truth about their convictions, and the fact that a lot of them were convicted on fraudulent and manufactured evidence, including witnesses who would coerce the prisoners themselves to enable them to and empower the government to secure conviction. These are similar across the line, across the board, from just about every political prison. If you review and investigate the facts of this case, you'll find a common line of practice imposed by both the federal and state governments across the country. And the same types of tactics were all generally applied. And so when you say that here you are, 15, 20, 30, 200, or 300 individuals, and all of them have similar lines of tactical application of laws that were used to justify their conviction, incarceration, and imprisonment, then surely no one is doing the same thing across the board, so that they would have such similarities in the tactical evidence used to incarcerate them, you know. But at the same time, you also need people to isolate different individuals. Sometimes there's a need to aid and assist individuals who are in need of certain particularized support. You know, I've been searching and trying to find a lawyer brave enough to come to Alabama or who already reside in Alabama willing to challenge the treatment that we're being subjected to in Alabama and being denied paroles on an equal on a balance and equal justice fashion. There's a lot of racial bias. There's a lot of political victimization where we are being denied for religious or political reasons to promote and enhance their careers, you know, as attorney generals, as governors, and what have you.
Okay. So what are your thoughts upon, like, I was asking you on the terms of, like, we talk about, like, your case. Like, what would you like people to do more so in your case?
Well, there are petitions online. There are some in the works being rewritten, recreated, so that opportunities for people to sign them, forwarding them to the care of the parole authorities or the governor of the state of Alabama, demanding that I should be treated fairly and justly, and granted my release, favorable consideration towards my release. There's also, as I said, a need for an attorney to assist me, where they won't concede to grant me my release on their own, that there are challenges already in writing laid out against the parole authorities and the governors and all the courts across Alabama who have ever been involved in making decisions against determining how we should be treated under the Alabama prison system when it comes to parole, matters of parole and pardon. If treated in accord with the way the laws are written in Alabama, hundreds of thousands of people, including myself, would be released with utmost haste. But, of course, that's also one of the reasons why no one wants to touch it, because no one wants to be credited with having caused a mass release, and who knows what other sidebar repercussions that will occur once those individuals are released. And that's not to say that they would return to a life of crime, but the opening of the door to receive just recompense for all these years of illegal detention. So a lot of times the people involved are afraid that some of us have enough sense to realize that there are some benefits to being illegally detained 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 or more years. Depends on the circumstances and depends on the individual. But there's also a need to bring in financial support. You know, I can always use stamps and financial support to facilitate my needs, or work towards raising enough money to hire me an attorney who's willing to take on the responsibility, because most attorneys do not want to work free. And that's understood, that's respected, and so therefore there's a need always opening to receive sufficient funding to help me back my fight against the state of Alabama, who's not going to pretty much allow me to do it if I'm not having enough cash to carry my own weight when I challenge them in court.
Okay. Well, I mean, if they need to help you, how will they get in contact with you?
Well, you know, my addresses are on my Facebook pages.
Okay. Could you tell me the link to your Facebook page? So they can, you know, so they'll have that.
Sekou Sentiu T.M. Kamburi, which is a Jericho-sponsored political prisoner page, also includes my address.
Okay. Could you spell your name for those that won't know how to spell it?
S-E-K-O-U C-I-N-Q-U-E T period. M period, K-A-M-B-Y. We have a Jericho political prisoner page there that includes my address.
Okay, could you tell us about some of the, I guess some of the things that you're doing right now in the concentration camp? I know you did briefly mention that you do, you work with other brothers, you know, in the camp with you as well, but could you tell us some of the things that you're doing on the terms of organizing,
We have an established organization within the prison, and we use those organizations to bring together the brothers, the younger brothers, as well as the elder brothers, and try to break down the barriers that exist between their ability to communicate and maintain harmonious relationships, so that they will be able to focus on the need to raise their level of consciousness and acquire knowledge in all those areas in which they have need to apply themselves towards their eventual release. So we work on their, typing skills, business management skills, their computer literacy skills, their pretty much just about every facet of social life that they will probably be confronted with, how to pursue a job, how to, after pursuing it or obtaining a job, how to maintain it, how to avoid acquiring more debt than they need in their life once free, so that they won't be tempted or forced to enter into a life of crime for insufficient funding or the inability to support themselves. But we provide different classes to aid and assist them in those areas in which they will be needing to be able to maintain and sustain their livelihood once they're released. including knowledge of law and the ability to protect themselves from, you know, incidences when they have confrontation with the law.
Okay, well, that sounds really good. Well, what are some of the struggles that you have run into in trying to organize when people are freshly coming into the concentration camps, when the brothers are coming freshly into the concentration camps, and like how do you relate to the youth? That's what I mean to ask.
Okay, give me a second. I'll be right back.
Okay.
All right, and Black Power, my family, we're holding tight. We want to say thank you to everybody that's listening in for Black Power Radio, and you're listening right now to the comrade brother Sekou, our comrade Sekou, who right now as you're listening is behind the belly of the beast in the concentration camp, as we are behind the belly of the beast behind enemy lines in the concrete jungles. And so we're linking it up. And for those of you all who have heard what we can do to help the case of our dear brother Sekou Kambui and so many other prisoners of war and political prisons, we want to tell you to get involved. We want to say get involved. And as the New Black Panther 10-point platform says, we want freedom for all political prisoners. And so, hell, not only do we have to get free on the concrete jungle, we got to get free behind the enemy lines of the concentration camp. Freedom for all of our people. And so we're just holding tight for our dear brother to come back and understand his circumstances. But for those of you all who want to get involved, email us at nbpphq@yahoo.com. We can begin immediately with letter writing campaigns. Brother Sekou, you back?
Okay, I'm right.
All right. And so Black Power to you, my brother, and peace and blessings. Sean Kwali, national spokesman. And I got to hear much of what you were saying, my family, and I just want to say that we are inspired and thankful for you taking the time out right now just to drop the jewels on us and drop the wisdom on us. And I would ask you to kind of explain to us on this. Explain to us, since you have been in the concentration camp behind enemy lines, how much time we're wasting out here on the streets on a daily basis.
I guess in one sense of speaking, nobody's time is really wasted, because no matter whether we fail or whether we succeed in our endeavors, we learn from it and hopefully learn from it anyway, so that we'll be better prepared to develop some idea of where we want to go with ourselves. In regards to us as a people, we're so easily to be just miseducated and misdirected as what should be a priority for us. Throughout the country, you have in prisons or in concentration camps throughout the country, they are entombed beautiful young, beautiful brothers and sisters who have been politically conscious and politically involved in one various function or another, whether the Black Liberation Army, the Black Panther Party, the Republic of New Africa, the Nation of Islam, 5%, or you name it. They are brothers who, because of their involvement in the community and their ability to apply their ideas and make something work for the growth and development of their communities, are now incarcerated, have been set up, victimized, or set up for assassination or incarceration, whichever came first. And most of us are under long-term incarceration. So a lot of times there is a great need for them to be highlighted, their background, their history, their ideas and thoughts to be highlighted for the people who don't know them, who need to know them, who need to be aware of the fact that it's a crime not to be supportive of the brothers and sisters who sacrifice their lives and their livelihood for the sake of fighting for their right to live free and as human beings and to be treated with dignity and respect for their humanity. And For the incarceration, a lot of these values, a lot of these principles that evolved out of their work in the community has eroded, and now there is very much a lack of principles and a lack of values and a lack of trust among us. These are things that need to be healed, and how do we do that is by working together with an open mind, trying to build our relationship rather than find opportunity, taking opportunity to attack and destroy each other. There are so many areas in which we have become strong that we need to be able to help those who are weak in those areas. And they are all of us individually. What we try to do in here is brothers who have talents and skills and who have knowledge, we tell them to, you know, hook up with brothers who don't have a certain kind of knowledge that they have. And oftentimes the brothers that they're working with have knowledge that they don't have. So they share and exchange information, they share and exchange knowledge, and they work together trying to develop strengths in each other, cultivate the best that they can for towards building character in them as men, so that when they leave here, they'll be better prepared to work with their people in the community, because a lot of times they have abused the people in their very communities that they came from, even their families, and so they have to learn to accept responsibility for having done so, committed these crimes and abused their fellow members of the community, so that when they return, they'll be better able to show themselves that they have, they have decided how to mend and heal the wound they inflicted upon their families or upon their communities, and deserve to be treated with the opportunity of doing so. But the fact remains that we're so easily to be misled by the propaganda that is put out there and how their cases are sensationalized, and we become alienated and soon estranged from them. And so they lay waste away in prison, no one knowing what's happening or why it's happening or care. And so these are things that we need to work on eliminating.
Yes, sir. When was your last parole hearing?
I think it was, I'd have to think about that a minute. I think it was around 2006.
2006. Okay. And so, from what you see and experience, would you say? I mean, I know it sounds like a automatic answer, but just for those who are listening who have not been through the hells and smells of North America and the prison walls, would you say that the system is completely slanted against us?
Is the system itself slanted against us?
Yes, sir.
That's obvious in many ways, where you have brothers and sisters who, you know, look how many years it took Geronimo Pratt to be released, DeRuba in New York to be released, you know. Look at how many times that our brother... So many of us who have not been released, who have come up for parole time after time after time, who most of us who have involved ourselves in furthering our education, who get involved in self-help groups behind the walls where we then build them ourselves, we participated and made a substantive contribution towards growth and development of people incarcerated with us as well as ourselves. But when time comes for them to be evaluated to determine whether they merit reconsideration for return to society, they are generally denied outright without any excuse, and mainly because of the fact that they were community leaders or they were members of organizations involved in community growth and development that wanted to help our people become economically secure or independently, politically, and able to facilitate their affairs in our community in such a way that the poverty in their lives was not as noticeable as it is, and help them find ways of overcoming it by self-employment, by pooling their resources and building co-ops that allowed them to overcome their impoverished conditions. But setting up schools in the community that allow their children to become educated and rise above the miseducation and corrupt educational system that is rubber stamped across the country. These are people who are continuously incarcerated, and so when they come up to be released, whether trying to go back to court or whether they go up for roles, they're continuously denied, and the people involved in these shenanigans sit in the background and laugh in their face. And so you didn't think you really was going to go free, you know? And, you know, I see around me now many people who are dying in prison because they've been held so long. They're broken hearted and broken spirit because they've been here so long that their families have been alienated against them. They are isolated from the community in such a way that nobody remembers who they are, what they might have been or could have been had they been still free. Their ideas have long been forgotten. Their contributions are no longer remembered, except for those organizations that we are affiliated with as we speak that continue to try to propagate the truth about the brothers and sisters who have been long-term incarcerated but are and removed from the communities and removed from their families and friends and community that they work with and they work to help build rather than tear down, and yet they are still refused a chance to return to become productive, proactive members in their community again.
Right. Can you kind of tell the listening audience the history on Dred Scott? I know that you talked before on Dred Scott, but for those who don't know, can you kind of break that down to us and what that means for us?
Well, you know, Dred Scott is side by side with the Willie Lynch experience that we had with William Lynch. But Dred Scott was a Supreme Court case that was originated in 1856-57, and the United States Supreme Court made a decision against Dred Scott, who, having been a slave in one state, was transferred to another state which did not sanction slavery, and therefore he felt that since he was no longer in a slaveholding state that he should be conceded as, his freedom. And, of course, when he was attempted to be brought back into the slaveholding state, he rebelled and refused, and this is how the case came into being. When he was being challenged for them to take him back into a slaveholding state, and so the judge, to make that as briefly, Justice Tanner in the United States Supreme Court at that time made a decision upon which a very renowned quote was issued and still talk about today, that no black man has any rights that a white man is bound to respect. And so, again, the Constitution of Alabama, 1901, was in...
All right, Brother Sacre, you still with us? All right, dear family, we lost the connection. Right, well, right now we're waiting to get the connection back with Comrade Sekou Kambui, who is behind enemy lines. And he was just going into and breaking down the Dred Scott case, or the Dred Scott decision of 1857. That said that, you know, in words, that the black man and woman here in America, we have no rights in the state or that in any state that the white man is bound by the system, by the criminal justice system to respect. And so all of this is tied in into why our comrades who are behind enemy lines, both male and female, have not received fair hearing and fair trials. And again, as our 10-point program says, that we want all of our people, all black people, when brought to trial, to be tried by a jury of their peers, our peers. And so, hell, to be honest, every black man and black woman in the hells of North America should be retried, because when we go to trial and you have an old, no good, nasty, funny-faced cracker judge on the bench, or an old Negro coon judge on the bench who is trying to push the will of the system, or who is enforcing the will of the system and the beast and the white man's world on our people, and with a white racist mentality, hell, there's no way we can receive justice. And so this is why things like this, Dred Scott, and, you know, all of that that brought together the amendments and the emancipations, all of this is important to understand how it keeps us away from our freedoms. It keeps us away from our freedoms because as long as we believe that we have freedom, you know, full and complete freedom, but we have concessions here and there that, you know what I mean, that they give us, but we're not free and independent for our own good, for our own self-determination, then we still have much to fight for. And so, hell, we got to get our people free. You hear so many times we say free Mumia, and we want Mumia Abu-Jamal to be free. And if he's listening tonight, dear comrade, we say that we love you and to keep your head up and stay strong, and we appreciate your efforts in the liberation struggle. For your words, they ring out all across the world, not just America, but all across the world, and your commentary is valid and on point, and it rings out all across the world. But just as we raise the cry, free Mumia, we got to also say free Sekou. We got to also say free DK. We got to also say free Shock G. We got to also say free all political prisoners, all prisoners of war. We got to say freedom for all the political prisoners. And hell, freedom for the political prisoners that's walking the concrete jungles every damn day. If you don't think that you're incarcerated, you better take a look around your surroundings. You better study something called the Patriot Act. Study what happened underneath J. Edgar Hoover and COINTELPRO. Clear signs of incarceration. And so that the prison industrial complex that our comrade is breaking down and giving us guidance from, all of that is a sign of a much, much larger prison industrial complex that we live in every single day. And so we have to build a black united front. We have to build a black united front. And to our brothers and sisters who are behind the walls, you have to build a black united front behind the walls. You got to stop the bickering and stop the beefing and stop being divided by sets and stop set tripping and stop being divided by sects and parties. But you got to build a black united front, be one nation behind the wall, be one solid force behind the wall, be committed to the cause behind the wall, because that's the only way that we're going to get free from behind the wall is if we're one solid force. And us out here in the concrete, we got to be one solid wall, got to be one solid force. We got to be united as a black liberation army so that in the spirit of Assata Shakur, who is now resting peacefully in Cuba, resting peacefully, I say that with quotations, in Cuba. And she was freed not because of some benevolent white judge or because a bunch of people got together and protested and said, free her now, free Assata, free Assata. Assata was freed because you had some bold black men and some bold black women who was willing to organize and go and get our soldiers and go get our prisoners of war. And so I'm also saying to that underground element that exists in the black nation, that black liberation army, that real black liberation army that exists in the black nation, you cannot forego the option that we must go in and get our prisoners of war. Hell, you seen just a few weeks ago, brothers who were fed up, who went into the police station in Detroit and took arms and went to battle with the police in Detroit. You've seen some of the same down in Florida. You see it popping up in other parts of the country. You have brothers and sisters who are out here that are mad and they're tired of being abused and misused and tired of scratching where they don't itch and tired of buck dancing and tired of being oppressed. And so instead of sitting back talking about what must be done, these brothers and these sisters are going head on with the enemy and going head on with the beasts and their oppressors. And so we give you a revolutionary salute, and we say that we must, in the spirit of Assata Shakur and the Black Liberation Army, not forego the option of going behind and going into the enemy lines and getting our prisons of war and political prisons up out of that mess. Because if we're waiting, as we heard Comrade Sekou say, if we're waiting for a benevolent judge, whether black or white, to free most of our political prisons and prisons of war, we're going to be waiting a long damn time. Our comrade was telling us that people are dying behind the walls. These bastards let the Scott sisters out on condition. On conditions, the Scott sisters are not free. They'll tell you themselves, the Scott sisters are not free. They are out on condition. And then the condition is if they mess up any kind of way, if they mess up any kind of way, they go right back to the plantation and right back to the prison walls and the prison cells. And so we say full and complete freedom. And so, hell, for that underground element that's out there, and especially to you street tribes that are out there that are so courageous that you're becoming terrorists to your own community, that you're so angry that you don't know who to attack or who to shoot or who to get at, you better take a look around at the political prisoners and the prisons of war and those who are incarcerated for unjust causes, and those who have been incarcerated at the hands of a wicked white society that has robbed us of name, language, culture, religion, folkway, foreway, and norm, and robbed us of the power of our own being. And in self-defense, you better start freeing some political prisoners. We better start freeing some political prisoners. And I'm saying, damn it, that all of us are political prisoners. There is not a black man and black woman in the hells and smells of North America that is not a political prisoner. The Honorable Dr. Khaled Abdul Muhammad, our black power general, and our national chairman, Dr. and Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, they constantly remind us that every black man and black woman in the hells and smells of North America is a Holocaust victim. We cry crocodile tears and we boo-hoo. We boo-hoo about that which happened to the so-called Jews. But you don't shed no crocodile tears for Comrade Sekou. You don't shed no crocodile tears for Comrade DK or Comrade Shock G. You don't shed no crocodile tears for Tutmosis Pyle, who had to run in exile. But you'll shed some crocodile tears for some so-called Jews. You got to begin to care about yourself, black man and black woman. We got to care about ourselves. And so it is important that we begin to not only focus on point number 7 of wanting to see an immediate end to police harassment and brutality, but it is important that we also focus on freedom for all political prisoners and prisoners of war. This must become a national and international emergency. It must become a national and international emergency that there are so many of our people, black people. I can't be concerned with everybody else. I'm talking about my own family that is behind the walls right now in 2011. And so it is important to understand, my dear brothers and my dear sisters, that it is a lucha continua. The struggle continues. The struggle continues. That we did not win the struggle just because President Barack Obama ascended to the White House. We did not win the struggle just because there's some more black faces in the halls of Congress. We have not won the struggle just because now we can drink out of the water fountain, or now we can go to the toilet and integrate the fumes, as the Honorable Dr. Khaled Abdul Muhammad says. We win the struggle when we have complete constructive change, and that we have a nation of our own, a land of our own, black laws for all black people, protected by a black army that isn't pledging allegiance to a flag that has given us suffering, shame, and death, but a flag, the red, the black, and the green. The red, the black, and the green. That is our flag given to us by the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey. Brother Sacred, you still with us?
Yeah, I had a technical difficulty, but I'm back.
All right, and so we got a few more minutes here in the show, my brother. And so I wanted to ask you this question: what are some of the things that are being denied in the penitentiary in terms of books or knowledge? Do you have things that you need and that the comrades need that are being denied?
Well, you know, there is always a need for educational material. There's always a need for books and documentary video, DVDs that educate, that will enable us to educate our people and continue to give them inspiration and continue to motivate and encourage them, because they have been, you know, stigmatized by the victimization of their incarceration. And so they've been led to believe that they are worthless human beings, no less so than they did when we came out of slavery, that we would never rise above on a level of equality with the so-called European. So there's always a need to continue to educate our people, because there is a poor quality education being afforded them to this day, and that they are even now still lacking adequate and sufficient reading and educational skills that will enable them to be able to think for themselves. So anytime we're able to accrue educational material or documentaries that provide us with educational opportunities for the young as well as the old, that enable them to empower themselves and become aware of the fact that they are truly admirable people, that they are truly admirable young men and gentlemen who can become warriors for the cause of their own freedom, because the slave must free himself. No one is going to arrive here to free him. There is no spaceship hovering that will allow someone to drop out of the sky and they will become their liberators. We are our own liberators. In the words of one of our political prisoners, we now, you know, we must free ourselves. We must free ourselves. And when we say free ourselves, not only literally, but we also must free our brothers from their ignorance. Free our brothers and sisters from their inability to maintain harmonious relationships and dignify themselves with maintaining a proper family relationship, and men supporting their children and taking care of their women and taking care of their wives and defending their families and standing firm in the good times as well as bad, or bad times as well as good, because we've been misled into believing that the slave family, where the family member could be taken away at any time, still exists today. So you have black men who have, you know, women scattered every which way, and they have children every which way, and they're always ducking and hiding from the responsibility of securing their lives. And this must stop. You know, we must go back to the, you know, extended family concept. We must begin to create safe havens in our communities where our elderly can walk the streets again, our children can play in the streets again without fear of being shot down by stray bullets, because someone who has lacking knowledge of self is out there destroying a part of himself by shooting down his other brothers and sisters on the street with impunity, with a lack of consciousness as to what they're really doing and perpetuating fratricide and genocide in the name of what? In the name of what? In the name of what? A dollar? Whose dollar?
Right.
Dollar that can be taken away from them at any given time. As soon as the government decides that it's time to shut down the dollar will be gone, and all those $40 bills hid behind walls will no longer be any good. So we are killing each other and destroying our lives for the sake of a dollar that has no real value when it comes to what it means to maintain proper family relationships, maintain dignity and respect for our men and women, and love for our children, and love to the extent that we would do whatever is necessary to sustain their lives and create a normal, peaceful, comfortable environment for them to grow up in, provide them with the resources that they need to educate themselves when the government won't do it for them. You know, we continue to harp on the fact that the educational system is broken down and needs revitalizing, But no, it's not the educational system that needs to be revitalized. Our minds need to be revitalized so that we understand that we have a responsibility to provide the necessary resources for our children to receive a proper education, whether at home or in our schools. So you can do whatever is necessary. Create that opportunity for them to live a better life than we have lived. And that must continue as it continued before us. When our elders thought best, that they create a condition, they make sacrifices so that we could live better than they live. And so we must carry on that legacy and defend that legacy and protect that legacy and preserve the integrity of our humanity by continuing to fight for our freedom and realize our freedom. You know, not just continue it as a hope, not continue it as a dream to be obtained, but a reality that must be manifest in our lives right now. Right now. Right now.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Tell us, I asked this question, and I want to know what your thoughts is on what does black power mean to you?
Black power means that we are an independent nation of people. Black power means that we are economically secure among ourselves. Black power means that we are supportive of ourselves, that we are encouraging of ourselves, that we provide empowerment for ourselves. And that we help ourselves and each other eradicate obstacles that obstruct and hinder us in the fulfillment of our life expectations for a better life for ourselves. And we do whatever it takes by any means necessary or possible for us to manufacture ourselves, because sometimes there's an unavailable opportunity. Opportunities must be made, must be created, and we must have the intelligence to create those opportunities for liberating ourselves, our minds, and our lives, and the conditions in which we live.
Yes, sir. What are some of the books? What are some of your favorite books that you like to get into when you get down sit down to read?
Well, you know, I'm a huge fan of Dr. John Henry Clark and all the brothers and Diop and all the brothers and sisters who Amos Wilson and all the brothers and sisters affiliated with them in the development of knowledge about ourselves. Of course, couldn't help but read the autobiography of Malcolm X. I couldn't help but read Frantz Fanon on a dying colonialism and black skin, white mass, because it developed me a mind to think and understand the nature of the situation in which I was entrapped. And mainly my entrapment was based on the ignorance of self and the world around me. My main entrapment was the fact that I had been denied my humanity. I had been denied a sense of my culture and my history and knowledge itself. So these were things that had to be overcome. And so therefore, I read just about books on every turn that you could find that were available. I searched them out to develop a mind that would enable me to become a thinker and develop my thinking independently from those of my enemy, so that I wouldn't have to wait on him to guide me in a direction that would allow me to continue as a slave, but create the opportunity to build a relationship with myself that would allow me to continue to fight for freedom.
Yes, sir. We have a question out of the chat room, Brother Sekou. The question comes from Saladin L. Bay. He says, what made you change your name? He says, a lot of people do for religious and spiritual reasons, but what is your reason as a black man?
Well, actually, in the Ibuza Sabbath that we name ourselves, we define ourselves. One of the things about changing your name from the slave name that you inherited, and, you know, sometimes a family member gets offended when you say, well, I don't want the slave name no more, because they are so in love with their slave identity that they misunderstand it, that they take it as an insult against the family. But my choice for choosing to rename myself was because I wanted to be able to define who I was for myself. I didn't want to be defined and circumscribed by a name that I had inherited from a slave master whose only reality was for me to become and remain his slave. So therefore, by naming myself or being named by other brothers and sisters, because parts of my name were not chosen by me but were chosen for me by other brothers and sisters involved in the struggle, the Black Liberation Army and the Black Panther Party and other organizations that I was affiliated with, whom I become acquainted with because of certain character traits that they had observed or noted in me. They gave me different names. And that's why my name is so long. nevertheless, the idea is to define your own reality, take control of your life. It's self-empowerment. You know, it's self, you are letting the world know that you have some knowledge and some idea and some respect and some appreciation for who you are and what your ancestors had sacrificed in order for you to become who you are. And so you name yourself because that is the one of the main ways that you show the world that you are now in control of who you are, your destiny, and who you are, and what you are about.
Yes, sir. Well, sir, we want to take a quick call, Brother Sekou. Can you take a call?
Yes.
All right. 973-592, you're on the air with Black Power Radio. Comrade Sekou Kambu, your question or comment, Black Power.
Black Power, Hotep, this is Dashaun Farad. Brother Sekou, I would like to know, did your prison, did the inmates in your prison participate in the recent protest that took place among inmates across the country?
Those in the area where I'm affiliated with, the brothers associated with my organization, generally when they are having some knowledge, they are in solidarity with and organize around among themselves to so that they can identify with what's going on. Previously, we understood, came to understand, and lately that Georgia's prison system had nationwide or Georgia-wide, so to speak, hunger strike. And, of course, no one in Alabama, to my knowledge, affiliated with me, had actually participated in any of those activities because they were only late, had late knowledge of them. But they were with them in solidarity and in spirit once they became aware of what was going on. And so they upheld the unity sign and identifying with them and their cause for some of the things that they propagated and they protested were things comparable to just about all the prisons across Alabama and other parts of the country. So naturally we were in solidarity with them and what they were representing in our behalf and in our name.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Brother Dashaun. And so we have just a few more minutes left in the show, Brother Sekou, and I just again want to thank you for taking our time out to talk to us here on Black Power Radio. It's definitely a privilege and an honor. Is there anything that you would like to say in terms of the gang violence and gang warfare, what we call the street tribes? Anything you'd like to say to the street tribes or those that are living the gang life?
Well, you know, I have never found gangs in and of themselves repulsive. You know, I have a divine, devout respect for them and their ability to unify around those ideologies and concepts that they do. However, I also, but I do find repulsive their behavior when it allows them to find some legitimacy to destroying the lives of other brothers merely because they don't are not of their color. They don't wear the same colors or they are not a part of the same sect. I think that we need to understand that these are alienations, these are dissension have been planted in our minds by the enemy and that they are used to perpetrate fratricide. Fratricide is brother against brother, and genocide is the outcome of fratricide because as a nation, when we are brother against brother, then eventually we die as a nation. So we must begin to find a common ground in which we can work. That doesn't mean you can't function independently as your own sect and organize around your own principles and your own ideology and your own conscious level. However, the need is to find a means by which you can cross, build bridges between one sect to another and help rebuild our communities, you know, get rid of the poverty conditions, pool our resources, and help create jobs for our young and our elders so that they can become independently men and independently proud of who they are and what they are, and they have the need to develop a love for their own communities. We could go from block to block and we could pool our resources and buy up all the land that in our communities so that we own our communities, that we are not paying out money to the outside forces, enemy forces, to sustain our livelihood. This is one of the reasons that we have challenged over centuries here in America that black people don't care about the community because the community is in and of itself belongs to an outsider. So if you pool your resources and buy the land in the community, buy these homes and restore them and make them livable, re-reg them so that the people can live in comfortable housing and secure housing and comfortable meaning that there's sufficient heating and air in the summer and heating in the winter, then you are making a contribution, and you're making a positive one, and that will be a lasting legacy for generations to come, who will be proud to know that I was a member of that particular sect or this particular sect, and we eradicated gang violence in our community, but we worked together to rebuild our communities, home by home by home, by neighborhood by neighborhood, until all the communities that we lived in were beautified. All the relationships that we had with each other were strong, and we were bonded and with the ability and capability of trusting and ourselves among each other again without having to worry about whether or not our children would continue to die by stray bullets being fired from our ignorant hands because we didn't know the truth about what we were doing and how we were destroying ourselves, either killing ourselves or setting ourselves up to become entombed for our life in prison or a death penalty that is controlled and the outcome of our ignorance.
Yes, sir, we got another call, Brother Sekou. 912-225, you're on the air with Comrade Sekou Kambu. Your question or comment, Black Power.
Brother, I have a question, brother. Do you think that black people nowadays are more empowering than the ones before us? Or?
I would like to think that due to the fact that a large number of us, a large margin of us, have acquired an education, have become independent thinkers, and we have become principals in our ability to communicate and live with each other, have the capability of becoming empowered. Some of us are not as empowered as we have the capability of being because we still lean toward being defined, our reality being defined by someone other than ourselves. And so as long as we are circumscribed and defined by other people, then we subject ourselves to the limitations that they impose on us. But when we redefine who we are, we redefine our goals, and we set no limits upon what we are capable of accomplishing, then we are really empowered, and we can strive to become greater human beings in our relationship to each other and to the world around us.
Okay, thanks, brother.
All right. Hope that answers your question, caller. We got another caller. 704-961, you're on the air with Comrade Sekou Kambu. Your question or comment, Black Power. You're on the air, Sekou Kambu, Black Power.
Black Power.
Black Power.
I have a question. As a youth, how would I help organize?
As a youth, I began organizing when I was a youth, a young person. I went among my peers because I had been affiliated or associated, would be a better word, with the growing civil rights movement at the time. So I used to participate in the rallies and the demonstrations and the meetings. And sitting there as a young man, I began to be inspired and motivated and encouraged to go among those who I lived with and worked with and played with and talk about these things that I had heard and come to understand was our responsibility as a young man to bring our young people together to become a part of the civil rights movement so that we were walking side by side with our elders and our parents and our school teachers and our principals and our pastors and on the streets of America fighting for the liberation of our people, even when we didn't fully understand the concepts in which we were being exposed to. But the idea of organizing among ourselves is no different than the ones we use to bring together our youth organizations and to deal with their growth and development across the country. The same ability that we have for doing that is the same ability we have for organizing around bringing a better quality, demanding a better quality education to be afforded to us in this country, that the economic conditions and the job opportunities be made manifest and not held out as a carrot on a stick for us to continue to reach for, but they are made manifest so that we can enjoy the benefits of them right now. These are things that we can organize. The youth can visit the churches and visit the PTA meetings and bring it to the attention of the so-called elders and the parents and the leaders of the community that these are the conditions in our community that causes us to have problems. And these are conditions that must be eradicated. And the way to eradicate them is make them aware of it and encourage them to strive to bring their resources, public resources, together to remove those roadblocks and those obstacles that entrap our youth in becoming alienated from themselves and alienated from their other brothers and sisters so that they will become self-destructive.
Yes, sir, answer the question. And so, for the sake of you covered a lot, we definitely appreciate you. We got about 10 more minutes. Talk to us about your time dealing with the Panther Party and the organizations that you were with. You say you were a young man. What were some of the things that you did as a young man dealing with the Panthers?
Well, you know, we, as a young man in Detroit and Chicago and other parts of the country, we participated in the breakfast program for the children. You know, we helped the parents and we helped the other brothers and sisters involved in the programs to provide the supplies and go out and get the resources that were necessary to make the breakfast as possible. We helped, you know, serve the children and provide the, you know, encouragement that they need to, you know, and the order that was needed in order for them to get in and out wherever we were feeding at. We also did other things as youth growing up at the Panther Party. We participated in the various political functions and political classes and were able to develop our own, you know, enjoy our own growth and development and becoming politically conscious, provided with the encouragement that we needed to go to the libraries and choose material that we would increase our knowledge of ourselves. And when we couldn't find it there, to search other opportunities for obtaining the resources necessary to give us and improve our quality of education. These were things that, as a young man, we were exposed to knowledge and information and ideas that enabled us to realize that there were some things that we had to do to assert our own selves and develop our own identity and build our own character. So it was a part of growing up. You know, we became less children, but more like young, mature adults because we had to take on responsibilities that we would not have had we still remained children out, you know, running behind marbles and running behind basketballs and riding our snow sleds around the yard through the park. But we had to become involved in other things that were constructive and that helped build our characters, mold and shape our ideas for future participation as leaders in the community.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. All right. A few more minutes left. I just want to say, again, thank you, my dear brother, for taking your time out. Is there anything that you would like to say in closing to the Black Nation, to our youth, and the people that's listening to the sound of your voice? What would you like to say? And make sure you tell them how they can help and give them the P.O. box.
Well, I'd like to say that they can join my group. It's on Facebook. It's Stay Cool. Into PM Kambui. It's a group, and we share and exchange political ideas and attempt to raise the consciousness of our people about our experiences as Black men and women struggling in America. And we try to bring together a bonding and a renewed relationship with them, the men and the women, so they will understand that there is a continual need for us to develop our ability to show love and respect for each other. I'd like to say that those who are members of my support team and my defense committee who are a little insecure about me participating in providing information to this forum, that be it understood that the government already know who I am and what I am and what I am capable of being and becoming. So what is there to hide that they don't already know? I've already been an enemy of state. I've already been entombed over 40 years. So what is there to be afraid of? You know, and until I die, we'll continue to fight. until I is understood that I only will be free on my own terms and that I will only live by my own definition of what my reality should be and not a slave, then, hey, be what it be.
Right on, dear brother. What is the P.O. box where people can send donations or write you and keep communication with you?
P.O. box 56, Elmore, Alabama. 36025.
All right, and that's P.O. box 56, Elmore, Alabama. 36025.
All right.
And so, dear Brother Sekou, we appreciate you, appreciate you, appreciate you, brother, for your contribution to the revolution, our liberation, and just for being an example of a black man who's willing to struggle and a black man who's willing to fight. Just fight, period, and like, as you say, not be a slave. And the hells of North America in 2011, comrade. We love you and appreciate you, and we say, brother, black power to you.
Yes, we must free our political prisoners and prisoners of war. That must be a priority.
Right on.
That's the legacy that we inherited.
Top priority. Top priority. And so, my dear brother, we're going to go ahead and disconnect it and wrap it up. But like I said, again, keep communication with us, and we're going to bring you back on the show. We're going to bring you back on the show to discuss some more.
Hey, as long as the circumstances conditions are right for it, I'll be there.
Yes, sir. Thank you, my brother. Thank you so much. Love you, black man. All power to the people, black power, soldier.
Okay, same to you.
And get Salaam Alaikum, peace and blessings. My dear family, that's our comrade. That's our dear comrade and soldier and warrior, Sekou Kambui, who is broadcasting live from the hells and smells of North America in the concentration camp. And he's kicking the ballistics to us, letting us know what time it is. And so if you don't feel the seriousness of the situation after that, you are just straight up dead black man or black woman. And again, we want to remind you of our brother's P.O. Box. That's P.O. Box 56. P.O. Box 56. Sekou Kambui. Sekou Kambui. P.O. Box 56. Elmore, Alabama. 36025. Send the dollar, send $10, send $100. Let's help our prisoners of war, because, hell, as you heard our comrade say, he's still fighting the beast, still fighting the beast. And we cannot let our family be forgotten just because the beast and the white man in the system want to throw our people away. If anybody should be enslaved, it should be those who have robbed us of our name, our culture, our religion, our folkways, forms, norms, and robbed us of everything that we had and took our land from us and took us from our original homeland. Those are the ones who should have been locked behind the prison bars. But because we have brothers and sisters who are not willing to take anything and not willing to bend over and give evil an opening and are willing to fight back and to fight as black, our brothers are targeted by the enemies, and our sisters are targeted by the enemy and ultimately incarcerated. So we appreciate the spirit of our brother Sekou Kambui, and we ask that you support his cause and support the cause of all political prisoners. We say free all political prisoners, and the call is still freedom or death. And last time, P.O. Box 56, Elmore, Alabama, 36025, Sekou Kambui. And so we ask that you continue with us on this mission as we continue to make the commission of the Black Power General, the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad, and our National Chairman, Dr. and Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, known, and as we continue to push the 10-point program of the new Black Panther Party until we have complete constructive change, which is revolution, here in the hells of North America and all over the world. Our website, It's newblackpanther.com to join. Newblackpanther.com, or you can send us your comments at nbpphq@yahoo.com. Again, that's nbpphq@yahoo.com. The movement continues. The struggle continues. The fight is still on. Don't be comfortable with concessions, and don't get comfortable in the so-called supposed wealth of the white man's world, because as our comrade already told you, the dollar is worthless. The dollar is already falling. It's already crashed. It's nothing. And so, again, join us for another power-packed edition of Black Power Radio as we say freedom or death, all power to oppress people, and black power. And we leave you as we came with love, but more black power.
In this motherfucking life, I leave. Hella motherfucking roadblock to put the cop. We still ride on. What's up? I want money in large amounts. My garage full of cars that bounce. Moving my face in major way, cause every dollar counts. Buses are jealous and half these niggas is drunk. They running off at the mouth till I fill it up with my pump. They jump my automatic, keep them wary. Why you fronting like you really badass? Nigga, you scary. I've been knowing you for years. We was high school peers in junior high. I was itching to kill and you was ready to die. Why you bullshitting niggas was dying to catch the cases. Busting my automatics at motherfuckers in foreign places. And even though great, they see my face and they bubble. Some bitches die in a hurry till I ride. I'm never worried. Mr. Machiavelli tell me to ride. And I'ma ride. Pick my enemies out the crowd.